Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Please be seated. Our first case this morning, 2022-1290, State of Ohio versus Enrico William Baker Beatty. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Benettini.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Pretty well.
Fantastic.
Before you start, I have to ask, which proposition of law are we debating today? We took in one.
Yes.
And without asking leave.
Yes. I apologize for that. It was, as I said in the brief, it was inartfully crafted. So.
Well, we get a lot of those.
It's both. It is that C1A is the provision which governs the consecutive service of firearms.
And that's what we're talking about today.
And that provision only permits the consecutive service of mandatory prison terms.
Well, next time, let's ask. Okay.
Okay. Okay. My apologies. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court, I'm Bob Benintendi on behalf of appellant. And if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. As I mentioned, the issue presented today involves the consecutive service of multiple firearm specification prison terms imposed pursuant to 29-2914-B1G and arising out of the same act or transaction. The appellant, Mr. Beatty, is asking this court to find that 29-2914-C1A governs the consecutive service of firearm specification prison terms, and that provision does not permit the consecutive service of non-mandatory firearm specification prison terms. Consequently, the consecutive service of the prison terms imposed on Mr. Beatty for his third and fourth firearm specifications not being mandatory should be ordered to run concurrently. And it's appellant's position that the trial court erred in ordering those to run consecutively. The current state of the law in the 12th District is that 29-2914-B1G is the provision which governs the consecutive service of firearm specification prison terms. That decision was handed down in 2012 in State versus Israel and was actually overturned in Beatty 1 in this case, but reestablished in Beatty 2, so it remains the law of the 12th District. But that decision is flawed, and it's flawed primarily for one reason, and that is the word consecutive does not appear in 29-2914-B1G. So what the 12th District did essentially in Israel was it inserted the word consecutive into that statute and then determined that the prison terms for the firearm specifications would run consecutively. But 29-2914-B1G is merely an impositional statute. It permits the court to impose these prison terms. It says nothing about the consecutive service of those prison terms. That belongs to C1A. So, and it's also improper because placing a consecutive service into B1 or B is improper because the consecutive service statute is generally 29-2914-C. So to create this word or insert this word in B is improper because, as you know, the default setting in Ohio is that prison terms will run concurrently under 29-2941. So that statute gives exceptions to the concurrent default setting, and it refers you to 29-2914-C. It says nothing about an exception to concurrent being under 29-2914-B. So the Israel decision in putting this consecutive language into 14B is improper simply because of the layout of the Ohio Revised Code. And I would note that not speaking on behalf of the state, but the parties seem to agree in the briefing in this case that B1G does not control or does not govern the consecutive service of these firearm specification prison terms, and indeed, it does belong with 14C1A.
So what are your objections to the en banc dissent by Judges Powell and Byrne?
What are my objections?
Correct.
To it?
In the en banc decision, Judges Powell and Byrne took sort of a middle road where they essentially said if the gun specification or the firearm specification isn't mandatory, that if reasons are given, just like they would be for a non-mandatory sentence, that they can be stacked.
Okay, I think you're referring to, yes, they held that C1A applies to the first two, the mandatory specifications, but when it comes to the discretionary prison terms, that C4 would apply. They applied C4,
correct,
which is equally improper.
And can you explain why?
Yes, because C4 deals with offenses. It would be much like this court's decision in Ford, where you had the question was whether or not a firearm specification would merge with the underlying felony, and this court decided, well, no, it wouldn't, because the merger statute speaks in terms of offenses, and a firearm specification is a sentencing enhancement, so those would not merge.
Except, can you have a firearm specification without an underlying offense? I mean, the jury has to find both of those things existed, the underlying offense, that there was enough evidence that there's a conviction, as well as they have to make the specific finding on the firearm. So you wouldn't have a firearm specification without an underlying offense. So why would the 12th District be prohibited from, or the trial courts in the state be prohibited from going ahead and making the findings that you would need to make those firearm specifications consecutive when they're non-mandatory?
Well, I would say because there's two different provisions that apply. To the offense, the consecutive sentence statute is C4. But to the specifications...
But that's not what C4 says, all right? C4 says if multiple prison terms are imposed on an offender for convictions of multiple offenses, it doesn't say the sentences for the convictions. It just says if multiple prison terms are imposed on an offender. That's the case here, right? Multiple prison terms are imposed on an offender for convictions of multiple offenses. So
right. So the trial court is free to run the offenses.
But it doesn't say the word offenses is not in the second part of that sentence, right?
Well, firearm specifications aren't offenses. So how would it apply to C4?
Well, because textually, it would seem to apply, right? There are multiple prison terms here that are being imposed for multiple offenses.
That's correct.
And then there are firearm specifications.
Right. I think we're agreeing, but only the C4 only applies to the consecutive service of the offenses.
Okay, but where do you get that? Because that's not what the statute says. So
Firearm specifications are not offenses. So how can you run them consecutively under C4 when C4, as you said, speaks specifically of multiple offenses? Firearm specifications are sentencing enhancements.
Again, maybe I don't know if you're just don't want to hear me, but that's not.
I'm not understanding.
That's not what the sentence says, right? It doesn't say. It says if multiple prison terms are imposed for multiple offenses. It doesn't say then the offenses are run consecutively. I mean, we do have a situation where multiple prison terms are imposed for multiple offenses. So
yes.
My question is, why would that
be? Are you reading from C4?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it's just the appellant's position that the firearm specifications are not offenses, so C4 wouldn't apply. You don't have to make the findings. And there's been, what you've seen is usually defendants will appeal cases where, and they'll claim that the trial court did not make the consecutive sentence findings under C4 before they impose consecutive sentences on their firearm specifications. And the courts in Ohio have routinely said, no, the trial court does not need to make the consecutive sentence findings under C4 because those are not offenses.
You're saying that the gun specifications are enhancements, which
yes.
are different than offenses.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying that. This court has said that.
Okay.
Under Ford.
Okay.
Yes. They're separate. Offenses and specifications are separate things under the law. So they have separate provisions that provide for their consecutive service. The offenses go to C4, and the firearm specifications would go to C1A. And that's the authority to run the specifications consecutively, is C1A.
So the jury's finding on the firearm specification is just simply a factual finding out there that's not really tied to any conviction of committing the offense while using a firearm?
No, if I understand your question, no, there's a finding of guilt on the specification. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes. So the Israel decision in finding that B1G governs should be overruled. But the crux of the argument here is which provision would prevail. The state is making the argument that these firearm specification prison terms are actually imposed under B1A, and the appellant is taking the position that they're imposed under B1G. Because B1G is a specific statute that deals with multiple felonies, multiple firearm specifications that arise out of the same act or transaction. B1A is a single felony, single specification, and it has the list of the prison terms. So it is, and the impositional language is contained in B1G. If you read B1G, you can see the word impose appears twice in that statute. So to say that somehow these prison terms that are imposed under B1G are actually imposed under BA is a stretch, because the language is right there. And I would note, too, that the legislature, I filed a pleading of additional authority, and in that I referenced the judicial release statute of 29-29-20, which was recently amended, and it just took effect in April, so it's only been about 5 months. But in that statute, under the definition of restricting prison term, the legislature described or defined it as a mandatory prison term imposed pursuant to B1A, and then it goes on to B1C, B1F, and B1G is listed in there separately from B1A. So for me, that means that the legislature really has recognized B1G as an autonomous sentencing provision under which sentences can be imposed, prison sentences can be imposed. So if it was just derivative, because the state is making the allegation that B1G is not a vehicle for the imposition of prison sentences, it is merely a merger statute or an exception to a merger statute, why would it be listed there then? If it doesn't have impositional power to impose prison terms, it wouldn't be listed under that new statute. I would also mention that if there is a conflict, if this court should perceive some conflict between B1G and B1A, B1G should prevail because it is the more specific statute. It deals exactly with the facts of this case, the multiple felonies, the multiple specifications, rising under the same act or transaction, and the B1A is more the general statute. I think of it as like the template statute. And it doesn't really apply, but it is the more general. B1G is the more specific. B1G should prevail if there's any kind of conflict between the two. Also, the later enacted statute, tenet of statutory construction, is the later enacted would potentially amend or even repeal these earlier provisions. So the legislature enacted the B1G subsection in 2008. And at that time, B1A had already been in existence. So 29-29-14-B1G is the later enacted statute. So in those terms, it would also take precedent and prevail over any conflict with B1A. I see I'm running out of time, and I would reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On behalf of the state of Ohio, Mr. Horton. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Fantastic.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Justices, may it please the court, my name is Nick Horton, I represent the state of Ohio. Your Honors, this case is about applying a common sense approach to the plain language of 2929.14 that aligns with the clear legislative intent in enacting 2929.14b1g. The 12th District held that any prison term imposed pursuant to 2929.14b1g, in addition to the two that are required, should be run consecutive, and this court should affirm. So when we're dealing with the issue of statutory interpretation, we have to look not only to the language of the particular statutes at issue, but the surrounding statutes, how it's used, the context in which it's used. And so the four statutes really that we're looking at are 2929.14b1a, b1b, b1g, and c1a. So b1a says that when a defendant is convicted of or pleads guilty to, for instance, in this case, 2941.145, which is the three-year gun spec, the court shall impose a prison term of 3 years. It's mandatory. We know from 2929.01x1 that it is a mandatory prison term. So in a vacuum, if we've got, in a case like this, four felonious assaults and four gun specifications, then under B1A, the court has to impose four prison sentences for each a prison sentence for each of the four specifications. Now, then we go to B1B. B1B is a merger statute. It says when they are all committed, when the gun specifications are all committed within the same act or transaction, the court is only allowed to impose a sentence for one. So in doing so, it operates almost identically to 2941.25, which is our merger statute for offenses. The exception to that statute, which this court recognized in Bolar, is B1G. And so what B1G says, it's an exception to that merger statute. And what that says is the court has to impose the two most serious specifications, and in its discretion may impose additional specifications. So what that is saying that the court has to find that two of the offenses do not merge for purposes of B1B, and may in its discretion find that additional specifications do not merge for purposes of B1B. And then it refers back to B1A, saying that if the court in its discretion decides that these do not merge, then we go under B1A, which again is a mandatory prison term. So the reference in C1A to mandatory prison terms applies in this case because B1G is dependent upon B1A, which are mandatory prison terms.
Doesn't this case really just come down to how we define mandatory prison terms, whether we consider all four of these to be mandatory prison terms because there's a definite sentence that must be imposed for those, the judge doesn't have any discretion, or whether we take the other side's definition of mandatory prison terms, which says, well, you don't have to impose them, so therefore they're not mandatory. That's really the crux of all
that is what this comes down to, Your Honor. Yes, you are correct. And the reference to mandatory prison term in C1A, it's not used to recognize a distinction between mandatory and non-mandatory prison terms. And we know this because it C1A also refers to mandatory prison term with regard to sentences imposed under B1C and B1D. There are no discretionary prison terms or non-mandatory prison terms that can be imposed under B1C or B1D. So it wouldn't make sense to label them a mandatory prison term if that's what they are just generally. So what I think this is the legislature recognizing that the terms that are imposed under B1A, B1C, and B1D are all mandatory prison terms. If the defendant's argument held up, it would, number one, run afoul of 1.47, section 1.47, which says that in enacting a statute, we presume that the legislature intended for the entire statute to be effective. Now, what the defendant argues is that under C1A, because it applies to the mandatory prison terms, and because B1G has a reference to discretionary, that it does not apply to those additional prison terms past the first two, meaning that if there is no other mechanism to run these consecutive, then it would render the court's ability to impose those additional prison terms ineffective because they could never run them consecutively. That also runs counter to the clear legislative intent. And this court recognized in Bowler that the legislative intent behind B1G was to enact or exact hefty penalties on offenders who commit certain violent felony offenses with firearms. And we know that, I mean, that's confirmed by statements made on the Senate floor by sponsors of Senate Bill 184, Senator Grendel and then Senator
You know we don't consider that to be legislative intent, don't you?
I'm sorry?
You know that we don't consider that to be legislative intent, don't you?
Sure, sure. But it's further corroboration of why what was presented to the General Assembly as to the reasons behind the enactment of the bill.
But isn't it possible that this is just the way that it's drafted is sort of a belt and suspenders kind of situation to make sure that in the first instance, if it's a single offense and there's a gun specification that it's that a mandatory gun specification that it is consecutive and considered to be consecutive with the underlying offense. And you know, G, where I question what your logic a little bit is that G is really focused on two or more felonies. If one or more of those felonies are aggravated murder, murder, attempted aggravated murder, robbery, felonious assault, rape. I think what I'm saying is that G is a little bit more boutique than some of the other sections, and that perhaps what you're calling a distinction is really just an overall, we're going to make sure we've got this covered and just sort of a belt and suspenders approach. What do you think?
It was definitely enacted to, because prior to this, there was only, you could only impose one prison term for multiple gun specifications. So the example that Senator Seitz gave, which was the Virginia Tech shooting, even though there were 30 plus victims, if that happened in Ohio, there could only be a sentence on one gun specification. So,
but they could still run the underlying offenses consecutive under C4, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, trial court judges they'd just be limited as to the enhancements under those facts. They could stack the underlying offenses in a multiple shooting like that, as far as they wanted to, right?
Correct. However, this is reserved for some of the most serious offenses where you're dealing with multiple victims of perhaps homicide or felonious assault, and this is to exact a heftier penalty and avoid any kind of volume discount on the gun specifications.
Well, what's the limitation for? What's the policy underneath the limitation on mandatory? If there's multiple counts, how many? What is the judge limited to? And
two.
What's the policy behind? Why would the legislature put a policy that would? Why wouldn't they just say, trial court judges, you're free to stack all very clearly. All of these?
Well, they are free, within their discretion, they're free to stack as many as they feel is necessary, but they are required to do the first two And that was, I mean, that was a back and forth between.
Why not require all of them? If that.
So that was something that I believe the Prosecutors Association wanted, and it was the process of a give and take between different parties with interests in the statute. And so, what they landed on was, let's mandate the first two and give the power to the court to impose additional ones, which could be reviewed on appeal based on the discretion of the court to impose the additional penalties. And I think that would align most or best with not only the plain language of the statute, but the general legislative intent behind the enactment of it. So because the 12th District was correct that these should be run consecutively, we would ask this court to affirm. If there are no further questions.
I have one more question. Your colleague on the other side differentiated between an offense and an enhancement. Do you subscribe to that view?
Generally, yes. We've typically treated offenses and specifications separately. Even as recently in Bowler, where this court said even though the underlying offense merged, we still apply the sentence for the gun specification. So there is at least some argument to be made that, yes, they are separate and that it wouldn't necessarily be governed by something like 14C4. But regardless, the trial court in this case made the C4 findings, and therefore this court should affirm even in that eventuality.
So what is your view, again, on the dissent in the en banc decision, the dissent being by judges Powell and Byrne?
Sure. So I similar to that answer, that I don't think C4 is the appropriate vehicle for running the prison terms for the specifications consecutively, but it could certainly, this court could certainly find that it does cover both offenses and specifications. As Justice DeWine was questioning
he's your colleague.
My colleague, yes. We go way back. that there is a way to interpret C4 to encompass both the prison terms for the specifications and the offenses, but I think it's most appropriate to find that these all are mandatory prison terms under B1A, and then therefore B1G and C1A, and use C1A as the appropriate vehicle, as Justice DeWine, I believe, did in State versus Pompeii in the first district. So that would be my answer to that.
Thank you.
Sure. If there are no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a minute 44 left.
I'll be brief. I just wanted to first touch upon the legislative history that Mr. Horton talked about. Those senators and the brief by the state all talk about the power to impose additional prison terms. And there seems to be a conflation of the power to impose and then the power to run consecutively. These are two distinct facets of felony sentencing, as the 12th District pointed out. So, just because the legislature gave the power to the court to impose these prison terms does not mean by the mere act of imposing them that they could be stacked consecutively. That has to come from a statute authorizing the consecutive service of those. So I agree that the court can impose as many prison terms as there are firearm specifications in a particular case. The question then becomes, what do you do with those prison terms once they're imposed? You have to look, because once they're imposed, they're concurrent. That's the default. They are concurrent. You have to look to some other
statute. Why would the legislature have created a statute that gives the judge the discretion to sentence someone to multiple prison terms, more than two, but then say, well, but you can only run them concurrently? What would be the point of that?
Well, that's the question. But
well, that is my question. So why?
I don't have the answer to that. But that's what the statute
says.
Why would
that nonsensical statutory scheme?
Well, and is that what the statute says, that you can only run them concurrently?
Well, can we have
no, because that's the default setting.
Let's do one question at a time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
That's the default.
Just trying to keep us playing. But that's if the statute doesn't say they must run concurrent, that's the default setting.
That's right.
So they can be run consecutively.
Yes, they can.
Just with the C4 findings.
Not the C4, the C1A.
The C1A findings.
But you can't. But in your view, you can't run more than two consecutively.
That's right.
So they cannot be run consecutively.
Not the discretionary ones.
So you've given the judge. So under your view, the judge would have the authority to impose multiple specifications beyond two, but it's a meaningless authority.
I don't know if it's meaningless.
What would be the point?
Well, I don't know. Like
why would someone sit in the state legislature and craft a statute like that?
Well, honestly, I don't think that's a question. We are here to interpret the words of the statute, what the legislature enacted.
Right, but we also,
but not what
but
they
we also
perhaps
needed,
meant.
We also
Maybe they
need
didn't
to use,
mean to enact
hold on,
that.
Let me ask a question. We also need to interpret those words in context and with a way that gives those words meaning, right?
Yes.
So why would the legislature craft a meaningless statute?
I don't have the answer to that.
So I have a follow-up question. How do you juxtapose the presumption for concurrent sentencing with what Justice DeWine just spoke about? I mean, you've got these varying views, even within the 12th District, that a gun specification that's not that's not mandatory or for a mandatory prison sentence. The sense says you can stack them if you make the findings like you do for the underlying offenses. But then we also have the statute that presumes that sentences will be served concurrently, whether they're a sentence for a gun specification or a sentence for an underlying offense, unless, in certain situations, it's specific in the statute that it's going to be mandatory. How do you juxtapose the underlying presumption in all of this?
Well, the way I see it is, let's say you have 10 firearm specifications. They impose 10 prison terms. The first two are mandatory, right? And the remaining eight are discretionary. Then you go to C1. Once they're imposed, you go to C1A, and you look at that statute, and it says mandatory prison terms can run consecutive. So the first two can run consecutive. And then you go to the eight discretionary prison terms now, and you look for statutory authority to run those consecutively. And what I'm saying is you go to C1, and now it says mandatory prison term, and these were imposed at the discretion through a discretionary act of the trial court. They are not mandatory prison terms under X1. So C1A is not your statutory authority to run those consecutively. But what the 12th did in the dissent is they said, well, shoot, we can't do this under C1A. Let's look elsewhere. So then they went to C4, and they found a way to make firearm specifications actually be defined as offenses, so then they could get it into C4. I would say C4 doesn't apply either, and I agree with Justice DeWine that you get two consecutive, and the other ones, they may have meant for those to run consecutively, but there just simply isn't the statutory authority to point to. It's not C1A because they're discretionary, and it's not C4 because they're sentencing enhancements. They're not offenses.
And let's put this in context. The offenses themselves can still be stacked on top of each other, consecutive, when the judge makes the appropriate findings. And under Bowler, the majority, even if they merge.
That's right. That's right, and that was the point I was going to bring up to Justice DeWine. What's the point? Well, the Bowler case does show that if you have three underlying felonies and three specifications, if the three felonies merge into one, the specifications do not. So you can impose and they stay. They will not merge. So that's a benefit of perhaps imposing the prison terms on those.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you will receive a decision from the court.